10/28. That's the date. Although we do repeat this show because it's so splendiferously exciting and amusing and surprising. But the original date is when we're on the phone right now. I'm dialing up a southern state where it's a bit warmer than it is here. And Adam Lepp here, by the way, in case you didn't already figure that out. Host of A Fine Er Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam and the professor, Professor Dr. Ronald L. Feynman, where L stands for, doesn't really stand for liberal, because we're actually going to talk about the fact that he often is on a show with someone who is so liberal it makes him look like a conservative. So L doesn't stand for liberal. It stands for lots of presidential knowledge and historical tidbits. Dr. Ron Feynman from Boca Raton, as we talk to him from our studio here in the beautiful city of Marion, Ohio. Let's see if I properly patched the cables in and duct taped the right places. How are you doing on this fine Monday morning, Ron?
I'm doing fine, and since you brought up my middle initial, it's Leslie. L-E-S-L-I-E is my middle name, not liberal.
So I can see why you go by the name Ron instead of Leslie. Somehow Les Feynman, you know, Les and Fine are almost like opposites. It's like Les's.
Well, I had a colleague that was named Leslie that always everybody called him Les, and that wasn't bad, but I guess if I had picked my middle name, I wouldn't have picked L, you know, I wouldn't have picked Leslie, but you don't get to choose your name, so that's the way
not
it
really.
Is.
I don't use my middle name because I don't like it, so I just go by, you know, Adam L. L also, in my case,
L, huh?
Stands for lots of interesting information, tidbits, and sometimes controversy. One thing we often joke about, and also when you're on with the interviewer to the stars, that would, of course, be Mr. Scott Spears. Scott likes to ask you, well, is there anything you like about Donald Trump? Because it seems like when you're on with him, there are two topics that always come up. One is Hillary. Is she or isn't she going to be running for president? In fact, once Scott borrowed from his sometime show opening, where he says, good morning, good morning, good morning, or good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. He went, Hillary, Hillary, Hillary. Almost like on the Brady Bunch, where Jan would go, Marsha, Marsha, Marsha. And so you talk about Hillary, a possible presidential bid. Something he also likes to ask you, and we're going to amend your answer because it looks like you've added to your small but interesting collection of answers to this question. And Alex, I'll take, what do you like about President Trump for $1,000, please? And we've added to the answer because, as is well known, you know, Donald does toot his own horn, which I think he does a little too much of, but I think he has a right to be proud of his accomplishments. Again, there are things I like about Donald. I don't like him as a man. I do find him amusing. I admire that he says what's on his mind, that he's innovative and different. I just question his professionalism, which I think is important. But again, issues, you know, there are things about him and things that are different that we may never see again in a chief executive. But yesterday, he definitely had a big accomplishment, Ron, horn tooting or no horn tooting, an ISIS leader passed
Abu
away. Abu Bakr
al-Baghdadi.
That's a really good name. I love that name.
This is a momentary positive, no question about it. As it was in the case of Osama bin Laden killed under Obama. And I say it's something he can definitely claim as an accomplishment, and we all salute him for that. But it doesn't unfortunately mean that America is safely isolated from the Middle East quagmire. And since so many ISIS fighters were released from prison as a result of the Turkish assault in Syria against the Kurds in the past 2 weeks, one can be sadly assured there will be a revival of ISIS under different leadership, ready to commit terrorist acts and torture people as they did from 2014 onwards. So it's nice, but it doesn't solve the issue of terrorism, unfortunately. And I don't know if it's going to help him much by next year. It might, but I don't think it's going to be enough to help him.
Now, you have a special activity. Your oldest son, older son, you know how I am with grammar, or elder son, Mr. David Feynman, who's an environmentalist, a very, very, very smart gentleman who just does so many great things.
The Conservation Lands Foundation.
He is being honored, and we'll talk about that. So, we actually are going to have to tape the show before you leave for the show that's going to come on for the first show of November, which is, I think it's the day before Election Day. So that'll really be interesting. It's kind of an off-year election, but psychologically it's a year from the presidential election, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that later. Marion has a major election coming up for mayor. So locally, the election is big, but on a statewide or national level, it's more just prelude to what's going to come up in a year when all you know what breaks loose. But we'll talk about that. But you write in your blog, Ron, theprogressiveprofessor.com, the headline from yesterday, Death of ISIS Leader, a momentary positive for Donald Trump, but it will not last. And as we mentioned, you are a mainstream Democrat. You talk about Humphrey as kind of being one of your role models. And we talk about
Joe Biden.
Right, Joe Biden and both Clintons. That's more where your politics stand. But there are people that certainly are more liberal, in fact, much more liberal.
Yes.
And one person that comes to mind is our mutual online acquaintance, the lovely Gwendolyn Holden Berry. Now, yesterday you were on a talk show with her and another friend of ours who's actually been on with me, Mr. Wayne Johnson, who used to live in Ohio also. Very smart, educated.
Yes, he did.
Erudite gentleman. And we'll talk about that when we tape the show for the day before Election Day. And as I've mentioned, I think you would agree, Ron, Gwen especially, almost makes you seem like a conservative, a moderate conservative.
I'm a moderate, yes.
Yeah, someone like
true. We get along very well. You have to learn to live with people you don't always agree with.
The Bushes, for example. So we'll leave our listeners in suspense, but when you when you wrote the blog, Ron, about the death of Mr. al-Baghdadi by special forces in Syria, You again applauded Trump. Okay, that doesn't mean that you're a fan of his. You believe that was something positive from his administration. What do you think?
Yes.
What do you think Gwen was thinking, though? Being someone quite a bit to the left of yourself, do you think that she would give? Do you think that she would give Donald any credit for that? And we'll talk about that more during our next show. We'll leave our listeners in suspense. But do you think someone like Gwen and other people who are really very liberal, even Elizabeth Warren might come to mind as someone like that, would they be hesitant to give Donald Trump credit for anything, even if it's something that's obviously considered a positive?
I think they would, because you can have anybody that you don't like, but you can find some of them, but it doesn't mean, therefore, stop moving to impeach him. It's a separate issue. But I think this is something worthy of commendation. So I have no problem doing that. But in my mind, the list of positives is so short that it helps him, but it doesn't help him in the way that is a major way. I don't think so. Among his supporters, yes. It'll be interesting to see what the polls show, what independents say, more than what Democrats say, which we'll know in about a week, I guess. So it'll be curious by next week to find out what is the general public opinion. I imagine it'll help him a bit, but it's not going to stop the movement forward to an impeachment.
Now, maybe a little bit ironically or just not unexpectedly, depending upon how you look at it, I talked about how, although I certainly have more things I like about Donald than yourself, I wouldn't in general call myself a fan or a supporter. One thing even his supporters would probably agree is that he's not the most professional character out there. He does run his mouth. He should spend more time enjoying time with his lovely wife at 3 a.m. than he should tweeting, and sometimes his tweets are a little bit on the crazy side. So on the previous day,
more than a bit.
Last Saturday, you write, well, Donald Trump, the miserable and wretched human being, very unpresidential. Donald Trump is demonstrating every day his true character, lies incessantly, worships money above all, is totally ignorant of all fields of knowledge while claiming to be an expert on all, spends much of his waking time insulting others with all kinds of names, including his few Republican critics being called human. Can you say scum on the air? Well, I guess I can.
Well, you just did.
Exactly. We'll also talk about something you can or cannot say in social media in a little bit. That'll give our listeners something to look forward to. And sees others as dispensable when they are no longer useful to his greed and ambitions. Should that be disposable or dispensable? I'm not sure about that. And sees others as
Dispensable. That's interesting. I don't know. I think he's actually had his own words disposable at the time.
I guess the best way is that
I'm not sure.
the expression chew them up and spit them out. I guess that's kind of how it is in a lot of workplaces, though. But we do expect the president to be more professional. Again, I'm hardly a fan of Obama. He told a huge lie about keeping your health insurance and Obamacare in general. The idea is good, but the way it was carried out and the lasting effects are a complete disaster. Although Obama did do things, I can think of two things in particular that I think are great that I don't know any other president would do other than Hillary. She would have probably done the same two things, certainly one of the two things if she were president. But again, the number of lies and the continual lying and also the tooting of his or her own horn. I didn't see that. I mean, other than the confidence, which I think you need to exude as a president because you are the leader of the free world. But I think Donald takes that just a little teeny tiny bit too far.
I'm sure he's going to brag this weekend on Twitter. And again, he has a right to an extent, but he's going to go to the far end on it, and it's going to make people disgusted because he's going to make it out like he's the one that did it personally, even though he did give credit to the special forces I saw yesterday. That was good. But I have a feeling he's going to make it more about me, himself, and I, you know, rather than what they did, because they're the ones who really were the ones in danger, not him.
Now,
but I think we're in danger, and Europe is in danger, with or without the death of Baghdadi, because ISIS is not gone.
And you're aware, of course, of the two things that Obama did, or at least had a large involvement in, that I think were great.
I'm not sure. I'm trying to figure it out, because you didn't give me notice ahead of time.
One is the 10%.
I'm not sure what
One is the 10% tax on tanning beds, as I feel tanning beds are deadly and... they should be legal because people are going to use them, but they are very dangerous. Yes, I'm addicted to sunscreen.
And, pick that up?
And I'm obsessed with not having sun infect my lovely skin. But I do believe, because they're dangerous, we tax cigarettes, alcohol. 10% is a start. I think it should be 100%, but it's certainly a beginning.
Oh, my God. I think I disagree with you, but I wouldn't think that's even a major thing to talk about.
But it's also a precedent because Americans are obsessed with tanning. And tanning causes diseases, not just looking older and your skin being blotchy, diseases that affect our healthcare crisis, which Obama has a lot to do with making worse, whether or not you agree with that. And it sets
a
good precedent. And it's just
it's
a particular interest of mine, something that is important to me. And I like the fact that it was done. And you don't hear much about it, which is okay, because it is important, and the precedent is excellent. Of course, the other one is the legalization of same-sex marriage. His Supreme Court appointments had a lot to do with that. Obama did change his position, but that's okay. The Clintons also
Joe Biden
changed
actually
position
the one that
on
changed
that.
It for him. Yeah. Came out on that before the president did.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's, again, whether or not you agree with it, from a moral standpoint, economically, I believe marriage has evolved. It's not what it was 100 years ago or even 50 years ago. It's not just for procreation. Again, 50 years ago, interracial marriage in many places was illegal. I don't know anybody who would not be in favor of equal interracial marriage, whether or not you would want to.
There are people out there that
right. but not many. And certainly there were a lot more even 20 years ago, whether or not Right. Whether or not you would want to have an interracial marriage yourself is irrelevant. That shouldn't stop other people from being allowed to have one.
I wanted to point out 1967 was when interracial marriage was declared constitutional by the Supreme Court during the Johnson administration. Loving v. Virginia, the name of the white man with the African-American wife is Mr. Loving, of all names. Loving v. Virginia. Yeah. That's when it became legal. Before that, it was not.
As I see it.
Years ago.
The idea that you can register as domestic partners, I don't like that idea because, first of all, people can do it fraudulently just to get health insurance or other benefits. Marriage is a legal arrangement, and people often do get married for a business reason as much as a personal reason. They stay married for the children. I mean, that's their business. It is a legal business arrangement, and again, how much property is owned by each party and how you can get divorced, even the age of marriage varies state to state, but the laws are fairly consistent. But with the evolution of marriage, where it now is a for love event. Again,
I wanted to mention many states, quite a few anyway, I don't know exactly how many, allow marriage for kids as young as 14. I don't think it should be under 18. There should be a national.
No, I don't think a 14-year-old should be getting married.
Well, 15 or 16 or 17, but it is in many states, particularly in the South.
Well, I would not agree with those laws, but with the evolution of marriage, the idea that it's between two consenting adults, and again, adult, although adult really is 21 now, as and smoking, drinking, those things require that should be 21. Other adult activities, voting, military, I think military service actually is 17. But 18, which I think 18 is, obviously everybody matures differently. Girls mature quicker than boys for the most part, but we have to set up.
People never mature.
Yeah, well, very true. We have to set some kind of a border, so to speak. So 18, I think, is a good age. But marriage, again, has evolved. Again, the idea that it's for procreation, that goes out the window when two 60-year-olds get married. And again, obviously there's a bigger difference between a male and a female than a black person and a white person. But I think taking that step was important and doesn't mean you have to agree with it from a moral standpoint or from something making it something that you would want to do personally. But I think with the legal issues that surround marriage, again from power of attorney to joint ownership of documents to signing contracts, I think that the time was right. And I very much applaud Obama because I feel he was very much behind that. It's just a shame that there were things like contributing greatly to the health insurance crisis that he was also behind that aren't good. So, you know, I have a mixed opinion about the guy, but I will say that I like his gentlemanly nature. He's also...
Yes, and I wanted to add one other real positive, his environmental policies. He's one of the best environmental presidents in history, and David would certainly, my son,
yes.
You know,
well, that's going
to
lead into one of the other two topics. Yeah, and there are things about Obama, again, also a gentleman, well-spoken, and a great role model as a family man. I don't know what he does in his personal time, but I believe that he and Michelle are completely faithful. They have a loving model marriage to children that they love very much. Excellent parents, and being a parent of school-age girls when you're in the White House, that's not an easy job. So those kind of intangibles Obama was excellent with. It's just a shame that there was just one thing that I mean, among other things, the one thing that sticks out in particular, that economically just was a disaster, and it's kind of a shame, but we'll see.
Okay, but I want to also make the point that he came in with 10% unemployment, and it was 4.7 when he left, and the stock market had gone up 250%, the greatest economic recovery we've ever seen over an administration, better than Franklin D. Roosevelt.
So coming up next weekend, Ron, we want to give a shout-out to your son, Mr. David Feynman, who is an environmentalist, someone who's done so much for our national park system, not afraid to challenge Donald and others who are not quite as environmentally keen. Tell us a little bit about the award he's going to get. And as a father, Ron, of a son who's, I think he's 40, right? How do you feel? How proud are you? How proud are you of your son, Dave, for getting this award and all that he's done to beautify our great country?
Yeah, well, extremely proud of him, always have been. He's always been a star. I remember years ago when I was teaching and he was working for Robert Wexler, Congressman Robert Wexler in South Florida. He came to talk to the class about working on Capitol Hill, and he got up. Of course, it wasn't like a lecture like I would teach, but I don't use notes. He got up and talked off the cuff, and I watched him, and I thought, my God, he's good. And not just because he's my son. He knows how to speak very well. He's a really great speaker. He comes across very well in any kind of a gathering, and he's getting at this... Actually, it's happening is he's the government affairs director for the Conservation Land Foundation in Washington, D.C., but he's also a member of the Association for Safe International Road Travel, Leaders in Road Safety, and he's been a member for years, and he's getting an award, which is called the Aaron, A-R-O-N, Sobel, S-O-B-E-L, Guardian Award, on Monday night, the 3rd of November, or 4th of November, I'm sorry, the 4th of November. So he asked me to come up to D.C. to be there with him, and we have to get dressed in suits and all that, and everybody's going to speak. So I'm very excited and very proud of him and everything he always does. He's just fantastic.
Yeah, and as I continue to mourn the death of my own father 15 days ago, I got a complete surprise at almost age 80. Just the idea of how a father is proud of his let's say middle-aged son and accomplishments. And, you know, I didn't hear too much from my own father, but I do believe that he was proud and intrigued, as my career path is not like my relatives. There are no entrepreneurs in my immediate family. And I'm always someone who should be self-employed because I'm just so independent, and I always think that I'm right, that not in a... Not, and I think the way that Donald is, just that I'm confident and that I like to make sure I do. I have an incredible pursuit of excellence. My dad have talked about and talked about that in our society, especially when you work in a big company, excellence is frowned upon. And when you work for yourself, well, people appreciate it. So
I think knowing you now for the last couple of years, you've done an exceptional job on this radio show, and I know you're really great at the other work you do. I'm very proud of you and call you my friend.
Yeah, you're almost like a second father to me, or you know, whatever relation yeah. might be. But yeah, it's just something. I mean, we encourage. I mean, don't be afraid to tell your son and your daughter that you love him or her.
Oh, I always do. I always hug them when they were growing up. I always very definitely emotional and passionate toward both my sons. Yes.
And no question, Ron, a combination of your excellent parenting and just David's, until we've talked about how smart the guy is, and just that he's a go-getter, I mean, like I, and doesn't give up, isn't afraid to aggravate a few people on the way. He does what's right, and he's getting an award that is well-deserved, one I'm sure of many to follow. Of course, we have a somewhat humorous...
I hope so, but in any case, very proud of him at this age to get an award, yes.
We have a somewhat humorous topic, which we'll continue to save, because I know you listeners are holding on to the edge of your seats, wondering what it is. So we'll talk about Ron's blog from late last week, a bit of a humorous blog that we sometimes, we touched on it earlier. Alternative candidates who might enter the Democratic presidential race. Now, one that's come up basically since... her husband moved out of the Oval Office is Michelle Obama. And people would like her to be president. I think at a general level, she's qualified. I would like to see a female president. I mean, she's a lawyer just like her husband. She's very smart and well-spoken, very physically fit, which people sometimes use to malign her. And some people will think, well, it's good to be physically fit. Well, she is. Yes, she does have muscular arms, but I think being in shape is good. And All the more power to you, Michelle. Plus, she's an excellent mother. But in all seriousness, Ron, is Michelle Obama a serious candidate, or is it more wishful thinking from some people? Or do you think maybe 10 years down the road, she'll be almost like Hillary and say, well, maybe I would be a good president? What do you think is going through Michelle's mind right
like
now?
Hillary. I don't see her as someone who has ambition. She's made it clear. I think she felt the 8 years her husband went through was nice, but it was also aggravating. I don't think she has any interest in being a public official. I don't think she ever would run. I think she's generally qualified, yes, but I just don't see her being another Hillary Clinton deciding to run. And if she was, she'd first run for like Senate or governor, and I don't see any signs that she's going to do that. So I just think it's just wishful thinking on the part of people, but Hillary Clinton is the only first lady who's ever run for president, so I don't think we're going to have a repeat on that for anybody soon.
So there are similarities in that, like Hillary, very intelligent, not afraid to give her opinion, and they're both lawyers, but you don't see the presidential aspirations of Hillary entering Michelle's mind. Okay.
And if she did enter, oh my God, like any candidate, she'd be ripped apart. She doesn't want to go through it. Who wants to do that? It's a hard thing to face the attacks you get. No matter which side of the fence you're on, you're going to be under bitter attack and all kinds of innuendos and lies and deception. Both sides, not just the right wing, the left wing too, you know, whichever side you is the opposite. And I don't think she wants that. She has a nice life, and she's made tons of money on her book, more than anybody's ever made, I think. Best-selling book ever. And I wonder if Obama's book will sell as well as his wife's. Why would she want to take that grief on? I don't see it, no.
And you mentioned John Kerry, a previous Democratic nominee, and someone I think in general I like his views, as he's a rather to very moderate Democrat. It just seemed like when he was campaigning, he promised the moon and the stars to everybody, and it turned off a lot of people. Plus, he's not the best-looking guy out there, nor is he a very good speaker. So that combined with his promises.
It would be 77. Yeah. We don't need another old candidate that would reach 80 in the term. We have too many as it is. I still think we should have a young person, you know.
He came across as a used car salesman, as I see it, just promising too much and kind of wondering what his views were. And I don't think he'd be a bad president. Like with Warren, I think he would come to earth when entering the Oval Office. But I don't think he has the aspirations. But I'm sure he enjoys a compliment that some people think he could be president. Another person.
So 16 years after being the nominee, if he came back, that'd be quite amazing. Almost a full generation later to become the nominee. But then there's also Hillary Clinton. I just can't see her running. I know that maybe Scott Spears thinks she might, but I think that would so divide the country. It'd be really destructive if she ran now. I just don't think it's a good idea. I think it's her time has passed, as I see it.
Now, Tricky Dicky, Mr. Nixon, and Mr. Reagan, they ran previously and lost, and they came back and won. So that can happen.
Well, Reagan wasn't actually nominated. He ran and was not nominated. Then the point is, in the case of Nixon, yeah, that's an exception. But look, Nixon also divided the country. And it's also Hillary's also in her 70s. Again, we're going for people that are going to reach near 80 in a second or first term. I still think that's not a good idea. And the same thing with Michael Bloomberg, who is, my God, he'd be 79, a month short of 79 in January 2021. And I just think it's the wrong way to go. But he might run. He might, because he's one of the wealthiest people in the world, billionaire. But I don't see him being a serious candidate. Or Eric Holder or Deval Patrick, I don't see either. I really don't.
Then we have Grover Cleveland, who was president, then wasn't president, then he was president again. So even that can happen.
But that's an interesting story. He actually won the popular vote three times, but the second time he did not win the electoral vote, just like 2000 and 2016. In 1888, he won the popular vote but lost the electoral college. But then his wife said, "We'll be back." Everybody laughed. And 4 years later, they were back, and they beat Benjamin Harris. So he actually won the popular vote three times. Only FDR has won it more times, four times.
And yes, I'm back, and he was back, and that's why we're not quite sure how many presidents there have been. Do you count Cleveland once, or do you count him twice? I guess presidentologists.
Count him twice, and we say Trump's the 45th president, but the 44th person to be president. That's always the confusion.
Wouldn't some people?
We count Cleveland 22 and 24.
Ron, wouldn't some people question if Trump is a person? I think you dug a hole for yourself there.
I'm not going to comment on that.
And of course,
I really stated the other day what I...
What list of possible presidential candidates would exclude Hillary Rodham Clinton? And you're thinking maybe she will just declare a candidacy late and she'll win, she'll run and she'll win. You never really quite know. But he certainly is on that list.
If you notice my article, I mentioned Sherrod Brown, your senator, who is the one of the list of rumors that I could actually see still announcing. Sherrod Brown. I'm curious what you would say about that.
Well, Brown, as I've talked about, should have been Hillary's choice for vice president, because if he were, she'd be president right now. I'm confident about that. Again, the president has to win Ohio. Now, Brown is a liberal, but not too liberal. He's not a very good speaker, not good looking, a little old, but you know what? The good well outweighs the bad. He is a good man. Again, maybe a bit like Jimmy Carter in that he's a likable person who's down to earth. And
he'd be 68 at the inauguration, not 70-ish. At least he would only be entering the 70s in the first term.
If we have Biden,
I think he's someone that might.
Yeah, yeah. We have Biden, Brown ticket. I believe that the B&Bs would W for win. another B, Mr. Buttigieg, if he were to pick Brown, well, I think that would also be a good idea. That would pretty much capture Indiana and Ohio, which obviously went very Republican last time.
Well, maybe Brown Buttigieg. How about that? Brown's the older one. Make him the candidate and Buttigieg the vice president, and then he debates Mike Pence.
Brown, despite his experience, is better as a VP. Again, he's not very well spoken, but he's smart, knowledgeable. A bit like Biden almost. Biden's an okay speaker, and he's kind of laid back. Brown also is fairly easygoing kind of a guy. So I see him as a good VP choice. He talked to Scott Spears and pretty much said he didn't want the office, but if he asked to serve, kind of implied that he probably would. So, all right.
And again, the first lady would be Jill Biden, and the second lady would be Connie Schultz, a well-known journalist. What a combination of women, huh?
Yes. Of course, you take a look at their initials, and that doesn't really provide a good acronym, but I doubt that would actually be applicable. We'll let our listeners
figure that one out. Oh, my God, I can't believe you said that.
So, we want to talk about something a little comical, Ron. If, like myself, you're a friend of Ron on Facebook, you may have noticed that earlier in the month, he didn't really have a lot of activity on Facebook. In fact, he didn't really post anything at all. And the reason was that when it comes to Facebook, Ron is an ex-con. That rhymes, doesn't it? You were in Facebook jail, Ron. You were a very, very bad boy.
I used two words, a term they did not like, and they blocked me. I could look at Facebook, but I could not do anything like or dislike something or write anything for a whole week. Yeah, I thought it was unjust, but there's no appeal. There's no way to call or speak to anybody to try to appeal it, other than you make a limited appeal, but they just reject it. Facebook is like a dictatorship in that way. They decide who they want, and yet they allow a lot of abusive things to be on there, I've noticed, so it's a double standard. But anyway, I'm out of jail, and I'm going to be more careful in the language I use, which I don't think was that bad, but somebody upstairs in the leadership thought it was.
You essentially made used a colloquial term, which is often used for some kinds of people, which, again, may or may not, I don't take myself too seriously. The term doesn't really bother me, but to sensitive ears, it might, and Facebook decides how sensitive they're going to be. They are a private company and a public company in terms of selling stock, but private in terms of they're not the government and not a utility. And if they feel that something Ron said was naughty, that he needs to take a Facebook break for a week or however long it was, well, that's a decision that they're allowed to make. And, Facebook's an optional service. You can choose not to use it, but we can certainly talk about it. Seems like I have friends going to Facebook jail every day, and sometimes it's because of posting photos. Yeah. Posting photos that are, as they say, NSFW. But again, what's considered hate speech, I think they were much too strict. Maybe a warning, but even what Ron said, it was uncalled for. But it's certainly amusing.
I feel that way.
And it's kind of cool.
Well, there's talk of trying to regulate Facebook. He was arrogant, Zuckerberg, at his hearing this week. And I think really Facebook is out of control. And many people think they're actually helping Trump and the Republicans for some crazy, it just seems crazy because they don't want to interfere with political speech, but yet they interfere with exact words you use as you attack a group. I don't know. To me, it's totally hypocrisy.
I mean, Facebook's an optional service. I mean, they have a monopoly, but again, you don't have to use it. There are other social media outlets, but with the way that Facebook is marketed, the way that the logistics of the service, all the money they make on advertising, etc., they have, for example, essentially put MySpace out of business. Google Plus is gone, and they were kind of a competitor to Facebook. And Twitter and Facebook, they sort of coexist, and they are somewhat different, but there are things in common. Even LinkedIn, which is more of a professional or job-seeking version of Facebook, I think is weakened.
But I'm on all three, yes.
Yeah, because you can do things on Facebook, and they now have Facebook dating. I mean, Facebook is a big enterprise, and again, if you don't like it, you are free not to use it. But again, it's America. We're also free to say that we don't agree with the decision that was made, and I think that Mr. Zuckerberg and his cronies were a bit too strict, but it is cool to say when it comes to Facebook, Ron is an ex-con. And we'll just leave it at that. One thing.
Hopefully that's the only time I've ever anything like that. I've never broken the law in any other way.
Yeah, Ron, a very law-abiding person. When it comes to Facebook, well, that's a different story. He was a bad, bad boy, and we slapped his wrist and We made him sit in the corner with a dunce cap, but all is well. He's out of Facebook jail, and he is on permanent Facebook parole, as they say.
And I'm more cautious of what I say. Sometimes I've been saying lately, I can't say what I'm thinking, but you figure it out, because people who know me know what I'm thinking.
Just like those initials of the potential first ladies, Jill Biden and the lovely wife of Mr. Sherrod Brown. Figure it out, you know. So,
yeah.
In your blog, Ron, from Tuesday of last week, Donald Trump donation of salary not unique. Hoover and Kennedy also donated their salary to charity. Now, I think the president makes $400,000 a year, which isn't bad, but someone like Trump could make a lot more money being in business. And of course, the fact that he's also seemingly running his businesses while being president and violating what I call the emoluments clause, or the emoluments clause, as it's supposed to be called, that's a different matter. But to Donald Trump, $400,000 is a drop in the bucket. And I do appreciate that he's donating it. I think that is a good thing. But he does toot his own horn. I think he's getting more than $500,000 worth of horn tooting by doing that. And Kennedy, also a very rich man, when president, he donated his salary.
Hoover was too, actually. But Hoover was too at that time, yeah.
What do you think the moral obligation of a president to donate his salary is, Ron? We talked about Biden. Not a pauper, but certainly one of the least wealthy, people running for president when he was in Congress. He was, they called him Amtrak Joe. He'd take the train from Delaware to D.C. Again, not poor by any means, but not as rich as some of these people. Do you think there is a ethical obligation of a very rich president to donate his salary? I mean, again, $400,000 to Donald Trump, or from back in the past, John F. Kennedy, and even Reagan. I mean, he certainly wasn't poor. Isn't a lot of money.
I would say,
but
you know, it's nice if they do it, but it's not an obligation. I mean, and obviously, out of all the presidents and many of the more recent ones, particularly have been wealthy, they have not done so, and everybody may think it's a big deal one way or the other. It's nice if they do it, but it's still a drop in the bucket, really. It's not that much help. But if they want to do it, fine, but I don't criticize them if they don't. So I'm commending John F. Kennedy and Herbert Hoover, and I commend Trump. I guess that's another small point to make in favor of Trump. But to me, it's not a big deal in a way that, you know, I think it's something to rave about. But the others chose not to. That's their choice. You know, everybody has their freedom of choice.
Yeah, I mean, we never heard about Reagan. He certainly wasn't poor. As far as I know, he kept his salary. But you know what? When you do a job, you want to feel appreciated, and even if it's, again, a salary which is, again, decent, but not as much as you would make doing...
Not for the responsibility you have, it's not enough. No, of course not.
So, yeah, it's a point you can argue about, and I think Ron and I would agree that Trump is using it mostly as an opportunity to, again, toot his own horn, saying that he's a philanthropic person, he's going to donate his salary, when you and I both know $400,000 to him is his lunch money, so to speak. So...
yes,
but I think it is a good measure. It just, whenever Donald does something which we like, he is out there bragging left and right, and it's okay to have that confident arrogance. I think.
He's had two things this week. First, that we discovered, and then about getting the ISIS leader. So he's had two pluses this week.
I mean,
but I don't think the two pluses make up for all the negatives.
I think you'd agree, Ron. Reagan handled the confidence without being overly arrogant much better, as he certainly he had a more professional way of tooting his own horn, so to speak.
He was an actor. He was an actor. He was a good master of ceremonies at events like Thanksgiving, Christmas, you know, the loss of the Challenger astronauts, the pluses and the minuses. I even joked in class years ago when he was in that he's so good at ceremonial things, maybe we should keep him at that, you know, when the next president comes in, because he really was excellent at it.
Yeah, and that's... But that is one of the jobs of the president. So I think a fellow Republican, Reagan, handled that much better. So maybe
so
Donald...
John F. Kennedy. He's really good at it. John F. Kennedy, yes.
Donald, if you're listening, just take that as some advice. There are ways to show you're being proud of what you did. And again, being a, you know, tooting your own horn, but not overdoing it, as I think he does like the tooting a little too much. We're talking with Dr. Ron Feinman here. A few minutes left to a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor here on the Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Adam Lepp here, your host and master of ceremonies and head comedian of sorts. Ron, you're writing your blog from the 25th of October, last Friday. Of course, we talk about the impeachment every show, so let's end the show with more impeachment proceedings and chatter. Republican senators who do not support Lindsey Graham resolution condemning House impeachment inquiry. And the senator geographically closest to the great Buckeye State would be Lamar Alexander of Tennessee. I don't know much about Lamar Alexander, so how much do you know about him, Ron?
First Bush. Actually, since I wrote that, four of those seven did sign the resolution after the fact. There's only three that did not: Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, and Lisa Murkowski. So basically, 50 out of 53 senators of the Republican Party have backed the Lindsey Graham resolution. It was originally 46, but now since then, four others, including Cory Gardner, Johnny Isaacson, Mike Enzi, and Lamar Alexander, have signed it. So the argument about that seven of them have not done it is not quite as strong, because now it means that there's at least 50 votes to back the resolution. Probably the other 50 will be against it, the 47 Democrats and Romney, Collins, and Murkowski. And, of course, the president already called Mitt Romney, you know, he's already called him scum, you know, because he's been a critic and he keeps on attacking him. So... It's also interesting, Susan Collins is facing election next year, and she went ahead and still in that group of three, which I think is interesting, because she's in trouble, so she's trying to be on both sides of the issues, including when she supported, of course, the Supreme Court nominee last year, that now she's trying to be on the other side. I think she may not even run. She may decide not to run. Her polls did not show her doing very well. We'll see what happens.
And the three left over are all geographically far from Ohio. We had Tennessee and Georgia, somewhat close. Now we have Alaska, yeah. Maine, and Utah, all very far away. Of course, among those three,
because Alexander, Enzi, and Isaacson are all leaving. So you think they would keep to their principles, yeah. You know, because they're leaving in the next year. They're now running against. I'm surprised, you know. But the Republican Party simply has no guts. I don't know what it is. They're afraid to oppose the president, with a few exceptions. And Mitt Romney really stands out in that regard right now.
Yeah, and interestingly, we have two females and one Mormon who has changed his state from Massachusetts to Utah. So three people that are minorities of sorts. And I guess you know the answer, Ron. I was too lazy to look it up myself. Are there any other female Republican senators besides Susan and Lisa? They're the only two females?
Oh, yes. There's a total of seven of them. Okay. And all the others are afraid to speak up. You know, it's just amazing.
Are they...
But I even wonder with Susan Collins if she won't end up changing her mind because she's worried about her election. But I think she's sort of like between the devil and the deep blue sea. Whatever she says or does, she makes enemies. And Maine is a state that the Democrats could win in the 2020 election.
Are the females afraid that if they don't march in step with their party, so to speak, that would be doomsday for their future careers in government?
I think all these senators, even the ones retiring, seem more worried about that. I don't understand Lamar Alexander. He's actually a fairly decent guy. And I said, wow, he didn't join it. And now he did. So even though he's leaving, he chose to back the president. And I think that's a mistake. But he's not going to pay any price because he's leaving next year. I don't understand their mentality. To me, you want your job, but these people, if they lose their seats, so they still have had a career. They still don't have to worry about how they're going to pay their bills. They don't have to worry about being homeless. It's not like an average person loses a job. They should have principles and have a feeling of convictions and hope and care about their reputation and history, but they don't seem to think of it that way.
So the reasoning behind these folks is just a tad mysterious. What do you think is going through Lisa Murkowski's brain right now as she defrosts in the great state of Alaska?
Well, she doesn't have to seat up to 2022, so that could be a factor. But also, Lisa Murkowski has been a bit of an independent type, and she also won her seat the last time, or two times ago. She won her seat in as an independent. She lost the Republican nomination in 2010, and yet ran and won as a third-party candidate and independent. So she's more of an independent type anyway. She's the kind you cannot rely on as much as, you know, as far as for the Republicans. She is unpredictable, and I admire her for that.
So she is an independent thinker. Susan Collins,
yes.
Also, not afraid. She will do what she thinks is right.
Back and forth. Right now, she's not very popular in Maine, but she's gone back and forth. She backed Kavanaugh, and a lot of people were upset about that. But now she's still not backing on this condemnation of the impeachment inquiry, which is moving forward without it. It's still going to go on, you know, no matter what the Senate. It's only a sense of the Senate resolution, and it's not going to win. It's going to get 50-50 unless one of those three Republicans joins and makes it 51-49. But it's basically just trying to make a stand for it. You know, how Graham feels, and I do think that John McCain, if he was here, would really punch his good friend and wonder, what the hell are you doing? I don't think McCain would support this resolution if he was here, but he's not here, of course. He's passed away.
Romney was fairly moderate anyway, not taking too well to Donald Trump insulting him, and I can't say I blame him, so not much of a surprise there.
And that's why Graham... be such a such a, I don't know, I don't want to say what I'm thinking, but I mean, really, he comes across very poorly the way he was so against Trump, and now he's so much for Trump. You wonder what's going on, Lindsay. You know, he's really weird. So is Rudy Giuliani. These people act weird. It doesn't make any sense the way they're acting. They're destroying their reputations.
Well, as I sometimes say, Ron, normal people are boring, and politics certainly ain't boring. Well, thank you very much again, Ron, for being with us on a fine-er mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor, another stimulating, intellectual, controversial, and humorous discussion. And again, wish you well on your trip to the nation's capital next weekend.
Thank you very much. We will tape a show this Friday,
which is the 1st of November, to air the following week. And it'll be a doozy, just like every show we do here. And I wish all you fine folks a great rest of your day. Adam Lepp here on the Talking Place, WWGH Radio.